Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
Denver Sports Station, 1043 The Fan presents Stokely and Zach.
Not Stokely and Zach. That was a lie. Neither of them are here. Mark Schlereth is still on his worldwide cruise. And so Stoke is with Mike Evans in the morning still. Zach is out today. He will be back tomorrow. But you have the pleasure of listening to Matt Smith and James Merrillat. Just as good, James. Just as good. Okay, so finally, it's time. It's time to get to my change of heart.
Okay.
I've had a change of heart as it comes to the Broncos head coaching search.
Where did you begin?
Last night, I hosted The Drive with John Davis, filling in for Tyler and DMAC, Everybody had the day off for Martin Luther King Jr. Day yesterday. And I was thinking about things. Then I did some work last night, and I was doing some, I was working on a project. You know, sometimes when you do a little manual labor, you get to thinking. It's a good time to be reflective and stuff like that. I was drywalling last night. I was, doing some good stuff like that. And then this morning, it was a little gloomy. Put me in a reflective mood, and I was just thinking about this whole thing here, man. And I got to tell you something, James, and I think this is an opinion that you share, at least you might, not based upon the last segment, but based upon something that I saw today on DenverFan.com, and make sure you check out all of James' great stuff that he does and all of our team, really, on DenverFan.com, some really interesting stuff on there. I am 100% out on Dan Quinn. 100%
100% out.
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
And you know why?
I'm curious.
And D-Mac was right. D-Mac was right. He was. Nathaniel Hackett should be the next coach of the Denver Broncos. I am so in on Nathaniel Hackett. I have completely done a 180 here. Nathaniel Hackett's, and from the start here, James, I have said, let's throw out Nathaniel Hackett's Packers years, because how much of this is LaFleur? How much of this is Rodgers, right?
Sure.
He came into a place that was already, established. So go back and look at his Jacksonville stuff and go back and look at his other career. When you go back and look at Jacksonville, he took Blake Bortles and the Jacksonville Jaguars to the 2017 AFC title game, and they led the league in rushing that season. The first time in franchise history that they had done that in Jacksonville. Coincidentally, they also had the league's best defense that year, Jalen Ramsey, some really talented guys on that side of the football. However, he was running an RPO-based offense with Blake Bortles and took him to the AFC title game. I went back and I watched a lot of stuff on Nathaniel Hackett, and I did some more reading on Nathaniel Hackett. I really like this guy's energy. If we're looking at offensive names on this list, and more so than Dan Quinn, I like Dan Quinn. Like, don't get me wrong. I think personally he seems like a really nice guy. But if you go back and you look at Dan Quinn's resume, okay, it's not just that he lost 28-3 in the Super Bowl, which I actually happen to think that's something that you go to bed in with a lot of sleepless nights over that one the rest of your life, as any competitor would. You always remember your big losses, truthfully, more than your big wins. You just do. Those eat at you. And then Dan Quinn comes back and said all the right things. He went on this media tour over the summer. I was watching this really interesting interview he did with Max Kellerman and Stephen A. Smith at the time on First Take, and they just raked him over the coals. Absolutely raked him over the coals. And you have to remember now, the Falcons, despite giving up the 28-3 lead, had a chance to win that Super Bowl had they just run the football, James. Had they just run the football, they were already in field goal range. Instead, they tried to throw, get sacked, the penalty, out of field goal range. They give the ball back to Brady. He comes down and wins. Now, remember, the year before when they faced Brady and the Patriots went to, played Seattle in the Super Bowl, and all Pete Carroll had to do was hand the ball off to Marshawn Lynch, but he didn't, and tried to throw that little, that pass that gets picked by Malcolm Butler, wins the Super Bowl. Dan Quinn didn't learn from that situation the year after. Of course, the year before that, he, or the 2 years before that, he stomped the Broncos in the Super Bowl. But So that one's a question to me. Now, you have to remember, that wasn't on Dan Quinn. Kyle Shanahan was his offensive coordinator in Atlanta at the time, who made the call to throw it instead of run it there. That ends up backfiring. But the buck stops with your head coach, okay? And in that moment, what the Broncos need is a guy who can manage games. We have seen enough of coaches bungling key moments in these games, okay? Time would be a timeouts, challenges, play call, whatever you want to point to over the last 5 years of the Denver Broncos history. It's too much, and the biggest responsibility at the end of the day is that the head coach can manage the game, okay? I really didn't like when I went back in reflection. Now, what was the game that got Dan Quinn fired in Atlanta? Do you happen to remember the game when Atlanta went to Dallas and I think they were up 2 touchdowns with about 5 minutes left, and that game ends with the Cowboys walking them off because the Falcons could not recover the onside kick after blowing a 2-touchdown lead within 5 minutes after having a significant lead in that game? You remember that one?
I do.
I am not a huge fan, upon reflection, of Dan Quinn's management style when it comes to in-game scenarios. It seems to me that he gets flustered in key moments in the game when momentum swings. And there's many other examples that we can go through. But I think primarily, James, that is a giant disqualifier for me, no matter how well liked he is. And on a personal level, he seems like a guy you'd want to sit down and have a beer with. Just seems like a really nice guy. But from that perspective, and not just that, remember, that defense was very talented. So after the Super Bowl, they went out, fired their defensive coordinator, added a guy like Dontari Poe. They made some upgrades and had some real talent on that defense. And there were some giant holes in that defense. I really didn't like, upon reflection, just the way things went down in Atlanta. Of course, he's had a nice little rehabilitation stint here with the Cowboys, and they play an aggressive style of defense. I don't think his defensive coordinator acumen can really be questioned. I think we've seen him prove that. But I have to tell you, then he said, what concerned me, James, is during this little media tour, he said all the right things. I've watched the Super Bowl so many times. We've learned from it. I think you have to take all those lessons and apply them. And then, as I'm going to review this offseason, I'm going to have a plan of attack for each player. And I'm not just going to look at it from a defensive perspective. I'm going to look at it from an all-encompassing perspective and work the situation top down as a whole. But it didn't work. It didn't work. And so, sometimes we talk about coaches getting another opportunity, right? But he got another opportunity for several more years in Atlanta and could not figure that thing out. And he had Matt Ryan and Julio Jones, two of the most dynamic offensive players at the time. Matt Ryan, in that Super Bowl year, was the verge of an MVP season. So to be honest with you, Dan Quinn is out for me. He's completely out for me.
Well, look, the game management type of things, did he mess up a couple of times? Sure. You had a couple of good examples, but we don't know what Nathaniel Hackett would do in any of those situations.
Well, hold on. We haven't gotten there yet. I'm just talking about Dan Quinn. So, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. So you're talking about an unproven commodity, right?
Yeah. And look, there's a really interesting podcast. If you can dig it up, I think it's The Ringer. I think Bill Simmons is talking to McVay and Kyle Shanahan, and they're talking about the end of that Super Bowl. It was like a 12-game parlay all going against them in terms of all the things that had to happen.
And absolutely.
You throw a screen pass, you get a first down, but then there's a holding penalty, and then Matt Ryan takes the sack. It's like, okay, the execution was terrible. I'm not sure the play calling was awful, but that's for another day. Here's my bigger concern with Dan Quinn.
Well, if they ran the ball, they would have won the game. So, agree to disagree.
Maybe. I mean, Atlanta was on the other side of a missed field goal in a big playoff game when Gary Anderson hadn't missed a field goal all year and hooked it for the Vikings, and then the Falcons went down and were able to win the NFC title game. So we don't know. We have no idea. Maybe they fumble the next snap. Maybe they hand it off and the running back fumbles. We don't know. But in hindsight, is there more of a chance they win if they run the ball? Probably. It's the same thing with Marshawn Lynch. We don't know if he doesn't get stuffed at the one and cough it up, but
Right.
Who knows?
Okay.
But here's my bigger concern about Dan Quinn. is I think if he comes in here, especially with the talent they have on defense here, I think he'll have success on that side of the ball. I love the way they're aggressive because it's the opposite of Vic Fangio, right? That was bend but don't break, very passive. Let's try and shorten the game and make our stats look good in terms of points given up. They never came after people. They didn't force any turnovers, 52 in 49 games. It was pathetic. I like what he did with Micah Parsons, moving him all over the field, very creative outside the box. It wasn't about his system. It was about the players that he had and getting the most out of them. Those I like. But for it to work, especially long term, he's going to have to hire the right offensive coordinator. When he was in Atlanta, he did a really good job out of the gate, and he hired Kyle Shanahan. And it worked, and they had the highest scoring offense in football that year. They went to the Super Bowl. Matt Ryan was the league MVP. And so clearly that was the right decision. But when Kyle Shanahan left and went to the Niners, the right choice would have been promote Matt LaFleur or Mike McDaniel to run the offense. Keep doing what we're doing. Dan Quinn decided, well, I want to keep running this offense, but I don't want either of those guys. He brought in first Steve Sarkisian to run it, who had never run it. So you're having a guy try and implement an offense that isn't his system and isn't his style, and he doesn't know about it. And he doesn't set up plays in the same way. It's not just calling the plays. It's setting up plays. And Kyle Shanahan's a master of it. Sean McVay's a master of it. Matt LaFleur's a master of it. Somebody who hasn't called that offense before would struggle. So that was a mistake. And then when Sarkisian leaves, he replaces him with Dirk Cutter and does the same thing. So he made the same mistake twice of let's keep the offense because that's what Matt Ryan likes, but let's bring in an OC who's never coached it. Both of those are just bad, bad, bad decisions that you should have been able to see at the time. It wasn't going to work. Now, certainly in the rearview mirror, it's clear that they didn't.
So that's a great point, and I want you to continue. And I think what's key in that is the ability to recognize the issue, but the failure to accurately address it.
Yeah, I mean those were misses. And again, for it to work with him as the head coach, he needs to hire the right offensive coordinator. So there are reasons to believe he can, and there are reasons to believe he can't. And he's actually missed twice and got it right once. So probably more reasons to believe he'll screw it up. So that is a concern. I also have heard some stuff with him where he talked about, you know, that he gets caught up and he's calling the plays and trying to think about the defense, and you got to be looking at everything else. Like, okay, well, is he going to be calling?
We just did that.
Is he going to be calling the defensive plays or not?
No, thanks.
That would be a concern for me. He did say in this same podcast I was listening to that sometimes, you know, he gets too involved with trying to help out on the offensive side of the ball. I actually kind of like that because at least he cares. Vic Fangio had no interest in looking at the offensive side of the ball except for the one game when they had a good game on offense, and then he tried to take credit for it for his deep dive after the Cleveland game. So.
But truthfully, as far as that goes, if he's feeling the need to have to go and help the offensive side of the ball, that's probably because he doesn't have the right people in place on that side of the ball.
Sure. No, but at least there's an intellectual curiosity.
Yeah. And an awareness. Yeah, that's true. Okay. So from that point, yes, I understand what you're saying, that at least he will actually go over there. But there's also an awareness, whereas I don't think there was an awareness with Vic, personally, not at all. I mean, maybe he knew what was going on, or maybe there was an indifference with Vic either way. So there's your examples right there. But truthfully, when you hire Dan Quinn, so let's go down this hypothetical avenue. You hire Dan Quinn, and like you just mentioned, the key hire then becomes your offensive coordinator. Okay, so let's fast forward a year under our assumption, and the Broncos turn it around, make a wild card spot, or potentially compete for the division in the next 2 years. Then guess what? That OC is going to be one of the hottest names on the market in the next coaching cycle. And so you might end up going through a situation where you're, you know, and this is, you know, admittedly the state of the NFL at the moment in time, but you might be going through a situation where you're faced with dealing with the same issue again and again, possibly replacing your offensive coordinator, and you don't want to be right back where you are right now. And if you hire an offensive mind that has the ability to design an offensive system and then hire coaches that can come in and communicate that, and he can communicate it with them, I think you have a better chance at finding a very good defensive coordinator than you do a better offensive coordinator. With the way the league has gone, with the way the game has gone, quarterbacks are being protected. Points, you know, the NFL wants scoring. Receivers are being protected. We see these developments, you know, in and out each year where a bigger emphasis and a greater emphasis is placed on the offensive side of the football. And if you have a guy that can be dynamic, I mean, look at the teams that advanced. Bills, Chiefs, Bengals, go through the list. Niners, Mike McDaniel, Buccaneers, Byron Leftwich, who you and I both last week thought should have gotten an interview here as well.
Yep.
You see these teams that, A, have good quarterbacks, and certainly let's not rule that out as being a huge catalyst for success, but you see these teams be able to adjust and adapt. Look at Buffalo. Last, you know, season and a half before the latter half of this season, they were a one-dimensional team. They didn't run the football. Josh Allen's legs did all the running. Now Devin Singletary's getting close to 20 carries a game. They have changed the way that they do things, and look at the way that paid off for them against New England on Saturday night. So I think that what you're looking for in a head coach is okay. So I think you're looking for a dynamic offensive mind. And number two, I think you're looking for a guy who's a leader who can translate and communicate that. And when you look at Nathaniel Hackett, it's extremely uplifting. It's positive, but there's a firm demeanor behind the way that he likes to do things. And from his dynamic offensive mind, I was listening to some of his football inspiration, what he was saying, where he kind of drew his inspiration from in the modern game. And he was talking about Rich Rod at West Virginia, Chip Kelly at Oregon, adapting those, you know, that RPO system kind of in his philosophy moving forward. And look, I mean, he comes from a football pedigree. This is a guy with a lot of fire who's worked for a while with success at different stops. So you take all of that he had done in Jacksonville, designing plays, right? Calling plays, really establishing himself as a high character guy. And I know that Stoke, you know, heard some things about him that he doesn't like him too much. You know, that some guys are a bit out on him, but I could also see a difference of personality there being a factor in that as well. And then you add what he's done in Green Bay. Then you add the experience around LaFleur, around Rodgers, around a winning culture like they have there, and he may go win a Super Bowl right now. So for me, Nathaniel Hackett, James, has vaulted to the top of my list, followed up by Eric Bieniemy. He's got a past, but at the same time, I think you look at what this guy has done year in and year out in Kansas City, just because he may not be the one primarily calling the plays doesn't mean he hasn't been there every single day learning under Andy Reid. And you go and you listen to what Andy Reid says about this guy. He rarely talks about any of his other coaches this way. And a lot of people, you know, sometimes there's questions about Andy Reid's coaching tree. But, you know, I mean, look, you know, John Harbaugh, Ron Rivera, there's some successful names on that list. And personally, I think so. For me, it has become Nathaniel Hackett number one, Eric Bieniemy number two, Brian Callahan number three, Kevin O'Connell number four. I honestly don't even have Dan Quinn in my top five.
Well, I get what you're saying in terms of wanting to go toward the offensive side of things. That's where the league has gone.
But it's the leadership, too. That's a critical aspect. And I feel like Nathaniel Hackett, despite being an unproven commodity, has a certain fire about him that, I don't know, there's something about him.
We don't know that, though, right? Like, with all those other guys, we have to extrapolate what they're going to be as a head coach. With Dan Quinn, both good and bad, we know what he's going to be as a head coach, or at least we've seen an example of it. And he did have success in Atlanta. I get it. They lost the Super Bowl, but he got an NFL team to a Super Bowl.
No doubt, with a lot of talent. No doubt.
What has Atlanta done before he got there, and what has Atlanta done since? It's been not a long time since, but, you know, it's not as though Dan Quinn was proven to be the problem there. So, like, I look at Dan Quinn, and I think you make a good point of – If you hire an offensive-minded head coach, you don't have to replace your offensive coordinator down the road if somebody comes in and poaches them, and it's easier to find defensive coaches. I would agree with that, because the offense, and this may make some people mad, but that's the more complicated side of the ball.
There's just more emphasis on it nowadays,
yeah,
too.
A lot of defense is about attitude more than anything else, so I agree with you on that. But if it was Dan Quinn And if he hires to be his offensive coordinator, the guy he should have promoted when Kyle Shanahan left, and it's Mike McDaniel, who would come here because he could call the plays, I would be on board with that. And if they get in a situation where 3 years from now they're playing so well on offense that Mike McDaniel's in demand, good problem to have. Cross that bridge when you come to it. I just think there's a little bit of a nervousness. And I'm not like Mike Evans where, hey, it's got to be a guy that's had experience because we've had first-year coaches here in the last two and they haven't worked out. I'm not going that route, but I think it's a bit unfair to pick apart some of the things Dan Quinn did when he was a head coach and not discount the fact then that, well, the other guys have no track record. Like, they're getting a benefit from never having reached that position before, and he's getting a negative because he has been there. I think that's a tad unfair. The whole
that's
thing,
fake
if I
news.
Want to go offense, that's fine with me. I got no issue with that.
No, it's not because he's been there before. It's because of what he's done when he's been there before. That's what I'm looking at.
He's been
at
to a
right
Super Bowl.
Now. I understand. Am I hiring the guy? No, I'm not hiring the guy. So, look, if you
How'd
disagree.
How'd that work out?
Yeah, well, yeah,
his
exactly.
His defense won a Super Bowl in
Thank
Seattle.
You, Rich.
And as a head coach, he's been to a Super Bowl.
You're not
How many
wrong.
How has Nathaniel Hackett been to?
No, you're not wrong. You're not wrong at all. But the way the league is going, I just do not see how you're going to continually reload at that position, because if they have success, he will get poached. There's no doubt about it. And will Mike McDaniel make look, yeah, okay, he would call the plays here, but it would still be somewhat of a lateral move. I feel like he'd probably want to move on for a head coaching position. I mean, isn't there a chance that Kyle Shanahan could still block him anyway?
Sure, unless you gave him some sort of a promotion, which would be kind of in name only. You know, they make
sure.
him the assistant
It'd be a
head
title.
Coach.
Yeah.
And maybe he would, which would tell you that'd be the guy you'd want to go get, sort of in the same way of, the Chargers were looking to bring Kevin O'Connell in as their offensive coordinator, and Sean McVay blocked that. That should be a big check mark on the positive side for Kevin O'Connell of, hey, if Sean McVay doesn't want to lose him, now if he goes to become a head coach, nothing you can do about it. But if he doesn't want to lose him, that is an important thing. The demeanor thing you talked about, I think, is interesting, because when I was on Friday with Zach, and I apologize, I don't remember the beat writer we had on that covers the Rams, but she was mentioning how, Kevin O'Connell is more of the consensus builder and, kind of gets
everybody. It was Jordan Rodrigue, by the way.
Yeah, that's who it was. Thank you. And, like, okay, there's something to be said for that. But I can see how that's a little bit more of the low energy person, and I don't want low energy. Again, I'm Costanza in this thing. I want the opposite of Vic Fangio, who was just the definition of low energy, because we can come up with the two times in 49 games he showed any emotion on the sideline, positive or negative, and that's just not what we want. And so, whether it's with Nathaniel Hackett, Kevin O'Connell, Brian Callahan, Eric Bieniemy, we're kind of having to pick and choose little things and examples and podcasts and interviews and things like that to try to figure out, well, what kind of a personality and demeanor are they going to bring? Because we don't know.
Truthfully.
Because they haven't done it. Doesn't mean they can't. But, boy, it's just, they're going to have to – George Payton is going to have to do more homework to try to figure out how is this going to translate as a head coach versus Dan Quinn. At least you know the positives and the negatives on that front. Dan Quinn's not my number one guy. You've got a
hit piece, a smear campaign out on DenverFan.com right now about Dan Quinn's missteps with the Falcons offense. Yes, exactly.
Just pointing out some of the things that should be red flags. There are red flags with Dan Quinn.
So you're just pointing them out. You're not saying that these should deter them.
No, it's like when I say, hey, Jared Bednar's never got out of the second round, or Michael Malone's teams have. Failed to live up to expectations in the postseason a couple of times. And people think I want him to get fired. It's like, no. I'm just saying that, there are reasons to, let's maybe look at this from another
angle.
So
I am looking at it from another angle, and I have looked at it and realized that angle is an angle I like a lot better than the previous angle I looked at, James.
That's fine, and I get it. And I'm not going to be upset if they hire Nathaniel Hackett. I'm not.
I'm going to be fired up.
He's in my top three or four. I just have guys I would be more excited about. And depending on the OC that was coming with Dan Quinn, that's the tricky part of the Dan Quinn hire. For me to be totally on board with Dan Quinn, I would need to know who the OC is going to be. And it can't be just somebody that the Broncos force upon him, because we've seen that with the last two hires. VJ didn't pick Mike McCoy and Billy Moose, and Vic didn't pick Rich Gangarello, and it did not work. Now, Vic got to pick his guy in Pat Shurmur, and that didn't work either, but I think you have to let them pick their guy. They got to work with them. They got to be on the same page. They got to be, you know, hey, the offense and defense have to be complementary here. So for me to be totally bought in on Dan Quinn, what I need to know, hey, who's your Kyle Shanahan you're bringing with you like you did in Atlanta? Yeah, I think that's fair, because you're right. It's all about offense. Like, watch the games this weekend. Look at who's still alive and who's still playing. It is all about offense, and it's all about the quarterback. I just don't think that should totally discount Dan Quinn.
Great. So then you have a year of success with that guy, and then somebody, some other team comes in and hires him as their head coach.
You don't want to date a nine because somebody might hit on her. So what? Who cares?
I understand what you're saying. My point is I think you have to recognize the state of the NFL and the trend of the league at the moment in time, because then we could be in a situation 2-3 years down the line after a second round exit in the playoffs, hypothetically, you know, just in our scenario, where we're right back to where we started.
But you
know,
and
that's why.
But given where this team has been, 6 straight years of not being to the postseason, 5 straight losing years. Worrying about what are we going to do if we're good and someone poaches our OC down the line?
No doubt about it.
Seems a little bit.
No doubt about it.
People call me Chicken Little.
Okay.
Good. Now we're just creating problems.
Okay. All righty. Well,
just making them
we're
up.
Not getting into name calling here, James. You can stick to that with Mike Evans. New wrinkles in Broncos ownership. Mark Kisla tweeted something out that caught our eye yesterday. We'll get into that next.
We're going to show the ball. Hey, here's the ball. I'm handing it off.
You're listening to Stokely and Zach on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
It is Matt Smith and James Merrillat filling in for Brandon Stokely and Zach Bye. Zach will be back tomorrow. Stoke will be back later in this week when Stink finally returns.
This is the longest cruise I think anybody's ever been on.
I think it might be. You know, they have those like worldwide cruises where for 6 months at a time you can. I don't know anyone in the right mind that would take it right now. I've found it very interesting at the people who want to just go back and jump out on a cruise right now, James.
Yeah, that's a gutsy move.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm all for, you know, hey, let's.
I like cruises, first of all. I enjoy them. They're fun.
They kept showing a commercial throughout the playoff games, and it was, I forget the line, but they're showing the cruise ship. I'm like,
prices have never been lower.
Oh, yeah, exactly. If you want a deal, that's the way to go.
Yeah.
I was like, man, that looks like a ton of fun.
Until you're locked in your stateroom for two weeks because you got an outbreak on your ship. Yeah.
I'm all for getting out there, but just I'm not going into it voluntarily going into a petri dish. I'm not doing that.
No, but I also understand it because I know that there are some people that have worked their entire lives and now choose to spend the remaining moments that they have here on Earth sitting at the buffet on a cruise ship. So hey, I get it.
There are worse ways to spend your remaining
There
moments.
Are worse ways to go out. There's
That's
no
right.
doubt. There's no doubt about that. They'll even take those cross-Atlantic cruises just to be on the boat, just so they're on the boat. And, hey, I don't blame them at all. That's what the water can do for you. So yesterday, new wrinkles in this Broncos ownership situation, and it begun with our 9 News Broncos insider Mike Kliss placing a call to John Elway yesterday to shoot the breeze and get his take on the Broncos coaching search. To which the conversation eventually evolved into the Broncos ownership situation, to which Mike Kliss, apparently he was on yesterday with John Davis and I when we filled in on the drive, and he had mentioned to Mike Kliss that he was interested in possibly being a part of what the Broncos do in the future. This coming off the heels of a report from Mike Kliss saying that the Broncos would be put up for auction, and that because there is a trust, the trust has a responsibility to its beneficiaries to get the highest value for the team, essentially. Basically, the Broncos are going to be sold to the highest bidder, is how this thing pans out. And the other interesting part to it was that previous to what we had thought and previous to what Jason LaConfora had reported, that Peyton Manning and John Elway are not actually tied to any ownership group whatsoever. The two of them hope to join the winning bid after they win it. So Mike Kliss was talking to Elway yesterday about these things, and then he says to Elway, hey, John, you want this to be on the record here, that you want a little piece of the pie? And John said, yeah. And then Mike Kliss mentioned that Elway could be willing to throw about $100 million attached to the winning bid to get like a 2.5% minority ownership percentage in a sounding board role, you know. Call me if you ever need anything, want me to weigh in on anything. And Peyton Manning is not attached to anything whatsoever, so his reported interest may not be as strong as we had once thought.
Yeah, it's all a little strange to me. Of why would you throw in $100 million to be a sounding board and just, hey, call me if you need any, you need any help? Because, then when he called Kiz, he doesn't want to be the face of the franchise. That's for the next coach, quarterback. It's for George Payton. That's for whoever actually buys the team. Well, then what the heck do you want to do? Like, you just left a job. You were the GM. You promoted yourself upward so where you could still make $5 or $6 million a year, hop on a plane, leave Coeur d'Alene, come in for the games, and then go back and hang out on your boat. Like, I get it. It's a good gig, but what is it exactly he wants to do other than, I guess, what he did this year, which, hey, that sounds pretty sweet. You get to, go to the game, sit in a suite, and hang out and vacation the rest of the time and get paid a big chunk of money for it. But it seems odd to me you would, put up $100 million to have that that kind of role. I feel like, and this is just me kind of piecing the things together here, that John is sort of scrambling here at the 11th hour to try and put together a plan. And I feel like Peyton's got a little bit more of a plan in place here and has something in the works. That's just me, again, reading the tea leaves.
So what are you reading there? What are you reading regarding Peyton Manning that would have you feel that way?
Well, Peyton's been involved with a group before. He was involved with a group that tried to buy the Panthers.
With Tepper, right?
Yeah. And that went a different direction. But that shows you he's interested in it. It shows you he's connected to people that can put together a group. Now, you also make it, hey, it's a team you played for. It's a team in the town that you live in. I would be shocked and stunned if he wasn't a part of a group. Like, that would make no sense to me, given that he's been down that.
Well, that's apparently the case, according to Mike Kliss.
Okay. I mean,
that's what Kliss reported. We can take him for his word. He hasn't been wrong. Lately.
We've also heard, though, that he's connected to multiple groups. Like, so yeah, is he officially?
But
Lockon
Fora has been more wrong. If we're gonna evaluate it based upon
right about the toxic environment that Vic Fangio created.
No doubt, he's hit or miss for sure.
So I'll say this: I think there's a little bit of semantics here. Of is Peyton Manning officially attached to one group? No, I don't think he is. Has he spoken to a number of groups here to where that when the game of musical chairs stops, he's going to have a seat? Yeah, I think he has.
I agree there.
I think it's smart, especially given that it's going up for auction. Look, you can attach yourself to a group that you think's the best bunch of people putting in money and going to be able to put the winning bid. But if they don't win it, well, then you're out. You want to give yourself the flexibility to bounce from camp to camp, depending on whoever does win it. So I think that's what he's doing here. To some extent, John's doing a little bit of it. The John one just doesn't make much sense to me, again, of like, well, what does he want to do?
He wants to be involved. He wants to be around. He's going to be here. He's got homes in Denver. This is part, this place is special to him. That organization is special to him. He just spent, a good chunk of years reviving it and then watching it fall apart as he decided to hit the golf course. So, look, I get why he'd want to be involved. $100 million to John Elway, I'm sure, is a good chunk of money, but it's not like there's nothing left in the cupboard.
But he can be involved without putting in $100 million.
But like, in this way, he's officially involved, and I think that probably matters to him a little bit. And then afterwards, so after Mike Kliss.
And it's a weird, hang on a second, yeah, it's yeah, a weird ahead. Asset, too. Because it,
I agree.
Know,
no,
yeah,
I
it's
agree.
It's going to go up in value, but it's hard to sell. It's hard to sell 2.5% of it.
No doubt it is. And is it going to, it's not like an investment that you're really going to make a ton of money off of, right? So I get where you're coming from.
It's like
owning
2% of the Mona Lisa. Well, who cares? You can't sell it.
I think it's to be in the club. That's just me personally. I think that's where his motivation is coming
Maybe.
From.
Now, that makes sense. There's some bragging rights of hey, I'm a part owner of an NFL team. But
yeah.
I don't think that makes any sense. And, Cecil had this in his Mile High Monday yesterday, and we saw it with our poll we did it in DenverFan.com's Twitter account last week. Broncos country has soured on having John Elway involved. They have. And you know what? This weekend didn't help. Because who's the only coach who went on the road and won? Kyle Shanahan. And despite the fact that he blew John Elway in the interview, John hired Vance Joseph. And what quarterback had an amazing performance and did something we've never seen in the history of the league? Josh Allen, a guy that John Elway couldn't bother to drive up the road and go to his pro day at Wyoming and instead took Bradley Chubb. Those two misses have set this franchise back for a long, long time and have created the mess that they're currently in. And Broncos country looks at that and says, you know what? You were a great player. You were actually a great GM for a while. But it's time for some new blood. Broncos country, this isn't even it's not like this is a 55-45 vote. It's a 90-10 vote. They'd rather have Peyton Manning than John Elway. It's a landslide. It's like Reagan Mondale in 84.
Yeah, I'm not surprised that Broncos country wants to turn the page here on John Elway. I'm not at all. But clearly, John Elway is publicly campaigning to be a minority owner moving forward. So that is what came out of that. Kisla had a piece in the Post this morning, pretty much confirming as such. After Kliss planted the idea in Elway's head, then Elway called Kisla while Kisla was at the Avs game yesterday. By the way, Avs shootout winners yesterday, 4-3 over the Wild. And there is some breaking Avs news, James. We got to get to it on the other side, though. It is Matt Smith and James Marilat in for Zach and Stoke today on Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan.
It's Stokely and Zach on Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan.
Matt Smith and James Marilat filling in for Zach and Stoke this afternoon. It is day 9 of Broncos coaching search 2022. James, before we get to our bit of breaking Avs news, just want everyone out there to send some good thoughts to Z-Bai's way. His daughter is going in for surgery on both her legs shortly. Eight-week-old daughter, obviously. Prayers, vibes, he says on Twitter. Thoughts, positive energy. We'll take it all today. We're thinking about you, ZB. Hope everything's going to go well, pal.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't have said it better. So gives us the chance to be here, but certainly we hope everything is going well for the Bai family today, for sure.
Do expect him back tomorrow, and I'll be on with Zach tomorrow. Breaking Avs news. We did it. Naz Kadri has been voted last man in to the NHL All-Star Game after being unbelievably snubbed from the original round of selections, James.
Yeah, I mean, certainly deserving. Leading the team in points. So
he's top five in the NHL in overall scoring. Yeah, he's deserving.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was an oversight. They got it right. I tend to not get too excited or upset about all-star stuff and snubs and all these kind of things.
Here's the only thing, and I'm with you, okay, from the perspective, here's the only thing that bothers me about it. I think it's a really good honor for the players, personally. I really don't subscribe to this whole every team should have representation like the NHL has transferred to, and of course baseball does, which if baseball did it, the Rockies wouldn't have had an all-star in since what, like 4 or 5 years ago? So,
which is how it should be. It sends
absolutely
more of a statement.
It sends
more of a statement.
You earn an all-star selection. Exactly. You don't just, it's not handed to you. So I'm not a big fan of that. Great to see from Kadri. The Avs lead the Western Conference at 57 points with games in hand, 4 games in hand on Nashville, and 3 games in hand on the Wild, 7 points ahead of the Wild. The Avs are off and rolling. Mikko Rantanen with the shootout win yesterday. Darcy Kemper did get banged up, though. That is a bit of a concern. Knocked out. We'll see what his status is here moving forward. Avs are off today, and then they have a back-to-back. I think it's at Anaheim and at L.A. Wednesday, Thursday.
I still think, though, it all comes down to, and Kadri's on this list, do you trust this team in the postseason? And you mentioned
Darcy. We're so long away.
I know, but you mentioned Darcy Kemper. Like, do we trust him? in the offseason, or is that something you gotta, or in the postseason, or is that something you gotta address at the deadline?
Oh, I don't trust him at all. You have to address it.
So even though it's a long way away, the deadline's not that far away.
So what's interesting is, let's talk about this dichotomy for just about 2 seconds, because I keep hearing this from all Avs fans, and truthfully, it's the exact same way I feel. They could win the President's Trophy, MacKinnon could win the Hart Trophy, Cale could win the Norris Trophy this year, and I still really would wait to see what they had to do in the playoffs, because when you get bounced 3 straight years, back-to-back-to-back seasons in the second round, that's all anybody's going to think about. Folks around here want a cup. I do like the mentality shift that I've seen. I feel like there's more leadership, you know, pretty much throughout the lineup on that group, especially from your top dogs. I think Mikko's really grown up this year. I mean, he's got 20 goals, leads the team, 26 assists, not an all-star. Truthfully, the Avs have 6 all-stars in Kadri, Rantanen, MacKinnon, Makar, Landeskog, and Taves. But look, like you said, that stuff at the end of the day isn't as important as what you do in the postseason. But we have a long way to get there. And I think because we all have that perspective on the Avalanche, we know we don't have to wait until the postseason to know we're not going to trust Darcy Kuemper, you know, come playoff time. So I think that's why, at this point, Sakic has to be aggressive when it comes to the trade deadline.
There are 3 things I don't trust about this team. That's at the top of it. The second one is Jared Bednar in the postseason, because he hasn't done it. And last year, they're rolling against Vegas, right?
I agree.
People are tweeting that, hey, the Avs may win the Cup. This is in Game 3 of that series. The Avs may win the Cup and not lose a game. And then Vegas has a punch, and he didn't have any counter for it. Like, the series just changed. It was over in the blink of an eye. So I think that's part of it. And then, look, Kadri's a great player, and he's having a great year. But he's also a guy with a very bad reputation that is one dumb move in the postseason away from being sat down by the league again for multiple games. And that's a thing that it killed him a year ago.
It did.
It did. And, you know, until you go out and prove you can play your style of hockey in the postseason and not cross that line, then I'm going to have my questions about it. So it's great that he's there. Like you say, when I said he's deserving of it, you'd laugh, because, yeah, it is a laughable comment, right? Like, he's the most deserving guy maybe on the roster, and maybe one of the most deserving in the league. But those are my 3 questions, and it's, you know, you just rattled them off. I mean, they're basically an all-star team.
Yeah, they really are.
The best team in hockey.
No, without a doubt. Their blue line is fantastic this year. Erik Johnsson has been great. He's, you know, I think top 10 NHL in plus minus after missing pretty much the entire season last year. Getting taken out, by the way, by the same guy who took out Darcy Kuemper and Jared Greenway yesterday. Regarding Kadri, real quick, to respond to what you said, he is in a contract year this year, and boy, making a move like that in a really high leverage situation would be a real problem for him. I'd be surprised, because he's most likely priced himself out of the Avs price range for next year, James.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. But
right, though, as an Avs fan, and I totally get it. Absolutely. And you have every reason to. Moving on to the Broncos here and this quarterback situation. When Mike Kliss joined us last week filling in for Zach and Stoke, he had mentioned that it was a big four, not just a big two in Rodgers and Wilson. It was also Garoppolo and Cousins as well. There will be some other teams on the market for quarterbacks this season, James. Pittsburgh, however, according to a report from Ian Rappaport, they're going to go with Mason Rudolph and then try and land Kenny Pickett in the draft somewhere.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Huh is right.
You've seen enough of Mason Rudolph to know that's not your answer.
But they already gave him an extension last year, so he's got another year at $5 million. So apparently it's going to be a competition between rookie X, Rudolph, and Haskins next year, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because to me it seems like Pittsburgh is a great situation for a veteran quarterback. Teams like, obviously, Washington, possibly Houston, and Detroit as well. I don't think Houston will, as you well know. I think Houston has an answer there if it's not in Deshaun Watson, if he comes back.
Yeah, no, you've got you're the leader of the fan club.
We don't need to go down that rabbit hole, though.
Here's the thing with Pittsburgh, though, right? Like, it's a very well-run organization, and they have a great head coach. I know they didn't play very well against the Chiefs, but we all saw that one coming. When they have to address the quarterback situation, they're not going out there, according to this report, and looking at, oh, how do we find a veteran bridge guy? How do we worry about, let's win now? It's, we've got somebody here that can hold us over, but we need to draft a quarterback and have a quarterback for a decade. That's what well-run organizations do. that organization's trying to patch it with Case Keenum, Joe Flacco, Teddy Bridgewater, and players of that ilk.
Well, it'll be really interesting because there is a new report that we are about to get into here, James, that a team near the top of the draft has come out today and said that they are going to put their draft pick on the market, possibly. Details on who they are next.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 1043thefan.com.